What I wanted to do today, I actually have something very, very unique prepared over here. There's a friend of mine that this relates to Parshas Parah. Right? This Shabbos is Parshas Parah. We're laying the Parsha of the Parah Aduma. It's part of the Arba Parashiyos. And a friend of mine did some original research and made a fascinating discovery, which I want to share with the Olam. And it also happens to be, I think, relevant to the, you know, not directly, but with a small extension, relevant to the parsha that's Emet al Perek for all of us. The Ramban at the beginning of the parsha Parah Aduma, he writes words that we're not learning because he says it's Alpi Kabbalah. We don't learn the parts of the Ramban that are Alpi Kabbalah. I'm just going to tell you some of the words that are here. He doesn't actually write that it's Alpi Kabbalah, but it is. It clearly is. So I want to tell you the words that he says. That he says, in explaining sort of in mystical, esoteric terms, the idea behind Parah Aduma, he says, Misa, we know from the story at the beginning of the Torah, Misa is related to Chet. Adam Rishon did a Chet, and because of that, it was Nigzar on the world Misa. So even though, of course, you know, now, in real life, when a person dies, that doesn't have to do with an aveira that he did, that person did, but Misa, meaning it was decreed on all of mankind as a result of the chet of Adam Rishain, but from that time, Misa is connected with chet, and that's the idea behind Tumas Meis, meaning Misa brings Tuma because it's associated with some kind of a koyach of ra, of chet. Every Misa is somehow a representation of the chet of the Eitz Hadas, of the Ra in the Bria, and therefore it creates Tuma. And then he says, that's why the Torah writes the words Zois Chukas HaTorah. Kolaymer, that means to say HaNechkekes Min HaTorah V'hi Torah Shebal Peh. What's dug out from the Torah, which is Torah Shebal Peh. Okay, these are Kabbalistic terminology. Alkein hi para v'hi aduma. That also explains why it's a female cow, why it's red. Midas Adin. All of this is associated with Midas Adin. Midas Adin, as opposed to Midas Arachamim, is connected with Nekeva, as opposed to Zachar, is connected with red, as opposed to white. Right, like you're familiar with from the Yom Kippur references. So, okay, Adkan. Now, obviously, those are not words that we could really try to explain. But they give us, you know, a sort of like an impressionist painting. They give us a sort of vague sense that the Parah Aduma is the red cow represents somehow the Midas Hadin. And therefore, it kind of makes sense that it is an antidote to Tumas Meis. Tumas Meis is somehow connected with Chet, with Ra. Period. Okay, that's the Ramban. That's this Kabbalistic idea that he shares with us, which is over our heads, but that's our background. Now, a story. A story that I think you're all familiar with. In the year 1242, there was the first of a series of very tragic, catastrophic events for Klal Yisrael. It was the first time that the Yidden had to debate with the church over the validity of the Talmud, of, you know, whether it's a kosher book or a non-kosher book, kosher meaning by the church's standards. There was a Meshumin by the name of Nicholas Donin who brought charges against the Talmud, accusing it of crimes really against the church, and the Pope said that, oh, these are strong grounds, strong accusations, the Jews need to respond to this. This was during the time of the Balei HaTosfos, Rabbi Chiel Paris, Rabbi Moshe Mikutzi, these are from the Gedolei Rishonim, they were present at that debate. They, without going into the details of what, you know, what the charges were and what the responses were, Lemaisa, the responses were not accepted as being acceptable to the church. The Talmud was condemned to be burned, and at that time the law went down in Paris and surrounding area that all Talmudic books were burned. Talmudic books really means any books that we would call part of Teresh Shabbat Peh, anything that had to do with Gemara or that had to do with Halacha, meaning they were fine with Teresh Shabbat Chsav. I think that to some extent they were fine with Pirushim and Teresh Shabbat Chsav. There weren't so many at that time, but I think Rashi, the church liked Rashi for some reason. And the Radak that was acceptable. These were Pirushim and Teresh Shabbat Chsav. But Talmud Bavli, Talmud Yerushalmi, Medrash Rabbah, these are all banned. The Rambam's Mishneh Torah, the Sefer of Halacha, the Rif, these are all banned. Commentaries on the Talmud, there weren't so many at that time, but there were Tosafim around, were all banned. And when I say banned, that means that they were collected and they were burnt. And the reason why I said that I expect that the story is familiar to many of you is because it's part of the Kinais. On Tisha B'Av, one of the kinos that we say, which was written by the Maram in Wittenberg, who later on was the Gadol Hadar, but at that time he was a young, you know, he was a Talmud of Rabbi Chiel in Paris, he was studying in the yeshiva in Paris, and he was a witness to this, and he wrote a very, very moving poem describing the tragedy of seeing the Torah go up in flames, and we included it in our kinos on Tisha B'Av morning. That part of the story is fairly well known, and that there were 24 wagon loads is the way the quantity is described, though we don't really know. I mean, that doesn't really quantify anything because we don't know how big the wagons were, but 24 wagon loads, and remember, it's all manuscript. It was a terrible, tragic loss of Torah. Not just, you know, it's not at all like if you know, Chas v'Shalom in New York State, they would collect all of the Svarim, all the Gemaras, all the Batei Medrash, and burn them. There would be a lot more than 24 truckloads, but it wouldn't be nearly as tragic. You know, we would all mourn for the blow to Kovet HaTorah, to see Torah Chas V'Shalom being burnt like that, but it wouldn't really affect Klal Yisrael's possession of Torah, because everything is on a database, and, you know, if 100,000 copies get destroyed, but, you know, you could always print out more, or you could log in and see it online, that it all exists. And even before it was on databases, once the Svarim were printed, you know, there were hundreds of copies of everything, or thousands of copies, and you could print more. But this was before all of that. Each one of those kids, everything that was burned was handwritten. And there were many Svarim that there were only a few copies of. Of course, the Talmud Bavli, we had many, many copies of. But who knows how many, you know, there's a lot of, we've talked about in Shir, there's a lot of different Tosafim out there, right? Every yeshiva in France would put out their Divrei Torah, and that's called a Tosfos. So who knows how many Tosfos we learn in Masechet Shabbos? We have a Tosfos Yeshanim on the side of the page, which we've talked about already a few times. This year we brought in the Tosfos Yeshanim from the side of the page. Who knows how many other Tosfos there were on Masechet Shabbos that were lost, that we don't have any copies left in the whole entire world because all the copies were burnt. So there was a real loss of Torah, because there were surely things, Divrei Torah, Kitzvei Yad, that were burnt that have no replacement. But even more than that, in terms of it really ended the Tkufa Balei HaTosfos. There was a little bit, you know, Rabbeinu Peretz lived in France in the following Dar. How he learned, what he learned is a little bit of a mystery to me. But basically, it took away all the Svarim in France. France was the main Magam Torah in the world in the 1100s, and in the first half of the 1200s was, yeah, probably fair to say, the main Makom Torah in the entire world. And after 1242, it didn't happen overnight. 1242 was a major blow. There was another one a few years later. It dwindled out. And then, you know, that pretty much brought the Tkufa Balei HaTosfos to the end. The last Balei HaTosfos were in Germany, not in France. The Rush, the Maram. So it was a terrible, terrible tragedy. That part of the story, like I said, I think is fairly well known. Now, there's another part of the story that's not so well known, and I had heard it a long time ago. I've seen it inside also. It was always a little bit obscure to me. I never knew quite what it meant. But here's what it says. In the Sefer Shibali Halakat, who was also from the same time period, this is not, you know, these are very trustworthy accounts because this is all contemporaneous with the events. The Shibali Halakat was alive in 1242, and he didn't live in France, he lived in Italy, but he writes that, you know, he was familiar with what was going on in France, and he adds an aspect of the story which I don't think we have from other sources. He says that it happened Parshas Chukas, when the Gezeirah came down. I don't know what he means, when the decision was passed that it would be burnt, or when it was actually burnt, I'm not sure, happened during the week of Parshas Chukas. And the Chachamim at the time, he writes over there, made a Shelas Chaloyim, to know what's going on. Again, I never understood what that meant exactly. What did they need to know? Like what were their options? I'm saying, like, if they wanted to know if it was Minas Shemayim, if it wasn't Minas Shemayim. But this is what he writes. They made a Shelas Chaloyim to know what was going on. And they saw in the Chaloyim, Dog Zeira Se Raisa, which is the Targum Onkelos of the word, Zeris Chukas HaTeira. And they took that to mean that it's Minas Shemayim, that it's Taka Gezeir from Shemayim, that this should happen, and so they let it go ahead. Or I don't think he writes so they let it go ahead. He just says that was their response, and therefore he writes that when they were Kaveya Tanis to commemorate it, it's very unusual Tanis, instead of creating a Tanis to a date in the month, they made a Tanis for Erev Shabbos Parshas Chukas. Every year, Erev Shabbos Parshas Chukas, which was the day that it happened, because they understood somehow that it was because the dream mentioned Zeis Chukas Atayr, Dug Zeris Eiraisa, so they connected it to the Parshas HaShavua, to the day of the week, rather than to the day of the month. That's what it says in the Shibali Halakat. Now, that piece, I always found very strange. You know, I had heard it, I saw it inside, I said it over, and never really knew what I meant. What did they want in the Gzeres Chalayim? Like, what was their question? And what was the answer? The answer, you know, as far as I was able to tell, basically the answer was just saying that, yeah, it's Minas Shemayim, like as opposed to what? Surely Hashem is in charge of the world and is taking care of things. What was Nischadish to them in the dream of Dug Zeris HaRaisa? And like the Shibali Halakat says, that they then understood that it had to do with the Parsha, and so the Tanis was Nikva Lafi, the day of the week. What did it have to do with the parasha? Because there were words from the parasha that were used in the dream. So, like, you know, it's seemingly just a play on words, right? It's just a cute way of saying it's Minas Shemayim. So they used words from the parasha of Shavua, Dug Zeris HaRaisa, Zeis Chukas HaTeira. What did it really have to do with the parasha? These were mysteries that I always found strange about this piece in the Shibali Halakat, which again is the backstory to the Sreifas HaTalmud in 1242. So somebody shared with me not long ago a discovery that he made. There's two parts to this. The answers to my questions about what was going on with Dug Zeris HaRaisa is found in a Ramchal, in a letter from the Ramchal. But to appreciate this better and to put it into context, I'm going to start with reading something from this book. It's called The Censorship of Hebrew Books by William Popper. Now, this is a book that, I have no idea how my friend came across this. This is not a book that was ever printed, you know, ever published for the general public. This was a doctoral thesis for a degree in, for a PhD in philosophy that was submitted by somebody who was getting a PhD in 1899 in Columbia University. And for his doctorate in philosophy, he did research on the history of the censorship of Hebrew books. There is quite a history of that. There's, I'm sure other people have written about it also. I'm not particularly well read on the subject. This guy, William Popper, who got his doctorate and he became, if I'm not mistaken, a Harvard professor. This PhD is through Columbia, but I think he became a professor in Harvard, if I remember correctly. And he was doing research into the history of the persecutions against the Talmud, basically. And he writes about how there was a new pope, Clement the XII, who came to power in 1730. And at his command, a thorough general confiscation throughout the ghettos of the Papal States was undertaken under the direction of a Dominican, Giovanni Antonio Constanzi. Okay, so on May 28, 1731, this guy Constanzi confiscated all the Svarim in the Papal States. Papal States, which is a part of Italy. Now, as a response, all the communities of the congregations throughout the country sent a petition to the head of the Holy Office, a Monsieur Giuseppe Asamani, in which they gave the defenses that throughout the day race all the Yidden have given whenever the Talmud came under attack, that no, the Goyim are misunderstanding, a lot of the things that you think are about Christians are not really about Christians, what you think is about Yeshua is not really about Yeshua, and even the things that are about the Christians, but they don't really mean what you think they mean. They gave a long list of terutzim, and the terutzim were reviewed by Antonio Constanzi, and his answer to the Inquisition was a general denial of the defense offered. Basically, he said, no, it's all not true. The Jews said that we've proven already that these things don't go against Christianity. No, they were not able to prove it. They said that, don't you remember that what Reuchlin and Bartolocci said, these are two Goyim that said, no, that was also not a good sushtel, he says. They referred to something that Clement V had permitted, and why does Clement XII have to be more machmir than Clement V? But he said, no. They're misquoting Clement V. He has a whole long explanation of how this Constanzi slugged up the whole petition of the Jews in Italy, and his recommendation to the Inquisition was that, meaning to this Giuseppe Asamani, who's in possession of all the Hebrew books from Italy, was that they should not be returned. And then it says, I'm quoting, what it was that caused a decision in spite of this answer to be given in favor of the Jews is not known. But nearly all the confiscated books were returned to them and the trouble averted. And he has documents based on that. He has a letter that they sent to Constanzi a short time later asking him that when you returned all the books, there were a few that you didn't return. Could we have those back also? So from there he sees that all the books were given back. He has documents that, what was his name? Giuseppe Asamani turned to Constanzi and said, you're the expert over here, what should I do with this? And Constanzi said, absolutely not, don't give anything back. And he said, yes, sir. And the next thing we know, all the books were given back. And he says, and we don't know why. A mystery. William Popper Blythe with a mystery. Now, this was May of 1731. Okay. There's a letter that the Ramchal wrote. This is dated Sivan Taf Tzadi Aleph, which is 1731. I didn't check exactly how the, you know, what the date is. I mean, the confiscation was May 28, 1731. So this you'd expect to be sometime in June. Chaf Sivan, right, which is about 2 weeks after Shavuos. So it sounds like it's sometime in June. You could go to Hebkal to get a conversion of the date to know exactly what the date was of this letter. This is a letter, Chaf Sivan Taf Tzadi Aleph, from the Ramchal, who was at that time a very young man. When was he born? If I'm not mistaken, I might be wrong, he was in his 20s. I mean, he only lived to the age of 39, Ramchal. I think he was in his 20s, like around 25, he couldn't have been more than that, 25, 26 at this time. And Rabbi Shaya Basson, but he was, if you know something about the Ramchal, he came in for criticism. There were people that were very suspicious of him because he was such an extraordinarily talented makubal at such a young age. When he was very young, he was zeichet to Giluyim from Shemayim, and all of the adult Mekubalim in Italy, and I think Mantua, which is where he lived, became his Talmidim. They came to learn by him, and he wrote extraordinary things. He wrote something called the Zayar Chadash, which was burnt and never got published. But basically, a new Zayar based on Giluyim that he had. He was an extraordinarily advanced Mekubal. So he's the head of all the Mekubalim in Italy. He's a young man, like what?
17 or 70.
Is when he was born. So he's 24. He's 24, right? In 31. He's 24 years old, okay? He's not too much older than most of you guys. He's writing a letter to his Rebbe, Rabbi Shaya Basan. And he says, I'm reading the second paragraph. The first paragraph is, you know, sort of greetings, hello, how are you? Then the Ela Sher Shalani Al Inin Gzeiras Hasvarim Shemimdinas Hakoimer. That which you asked me about the Gzeir against the Svarim in Bimdinas Hakoimer in the Papal States. Kvar Yedeya Kvar Teirasei Ashani Meshachti Yad Midaber Dvar Binyanu Ma'ela. You know that I really am very careful not to speak about these things. Acham Kachani Lachem La'ei Kachem Kvar Teirasei Kol Asher Uchal Kol Shkein Shein De Dvar Katan L'Gad L'Mari. But well, that's my policy for others. But of course, I can't. I'm not going to treat Rebbe like that. After all, this is a very big thing. Let me explain where this came from, that the Goyim came and took away all the Gemaras. Where does that come from? It has to have a Sherish from the Shemayim. It's not, in other words, the Sherish is not politics. It's not because Clement the 12th was a stricter pope than Clement the 11th. It was something min hashemayim that caused that the svarim should be taken away from kaisel in devar b'lei sheirish. V'soid ze zeis chukas ha-teira. V'targumai dog zeiris ha-reisa. V'noida shakan nirma zinyin ze. He says, we all know that the inyan of gzeiris against the svarim of teirish shaval peh is merumas in dog zeiris ha-reisa. How do we all know that? We know that from the story of 1242. That's what it means, that this was 500 years later, 490 or so years later. But the story was well known. It's recorded in the Shivali Alaket. He knew it maybe from reading in the Shivali Alaket, or he knew it on his own. But here already, right, we're supposed to say, oh, there was more to that story than met the eye. He says, the Sheirish of the Gzeiris HaSvarim is in Paraduma. Is in Zayt Chukas HaTeira. V'seid HaDavar Hu Mamish Inyan HaPara HaAduma. The Seid here is Para Aduma. Shash, now I'm reading, I shouldn't even translate, I'm reading words, these are very Kabbalistic terminology, we don't know what this means, but we're just going to get the basic words that he's saying, okay? It's Ramchal talking, he's not writing for us. But we're listening in. Shashchina Moseres Atzma Lisrefas Hadin Hachazok Lahatzel Es Yisrael. Vihi Hanitenes Lataras Temeim Shein Lahem Tara Elihi. Heim Hanitmoim Betuma Hayesu Tekifa Dahainu Tumas Meis Shelachain Ein Lahem Tikun Eloze. Vihi Atzma Hatuma Shel Hagolos Beseda Shivani Bemachshakim Kemeisei Oilam. Ve'al kein hi ha'oila al mokta kol alayla v'chulu. Avot tzarech shiye his oiris laze lemata. Ulechem is mantra ha'ibiz mokta shkaim ha'isa efer ha'para. So what he's saying here is like this. That sometimes there is an intensification of ra in the bria and the things would go very bad for Klal Yisrael, or maybe for the Bria as a whole, and so there's Kviyachel. Again, I don't know even how to express this, but his words are that the most severe part of the Midas Hadin, the Midas Hadin HaChazak, gets given over. And that somehow that removes the intensity of the or the severity. Okay, these are terms beyond my my comprehension. I don't know what that means, but there's a part of the Torah that we're not privy to. But what we could be privy to is, he says, and that's what's going on by Parah Aduma. Come back to the Ramban that we started with. The Ramban says the Parah Aduma, the reason why it's female, the reason why it's red is because it's the Midas Hadin. It's connected with Tumas Meis, which is connected with Chet. So what's going on by Parah Aduma is that the some kind of an embodiment of the Midas Hadin gets sacrificed, gets nimsar, gets given over. And like the Ramchal says, that really is in Shemayim. Avot Tzorech Lezeh His Eiris Milamata. He's right. Really, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is sacrificing. Maybe that means striking down the most severe part of the Midas Hadin. Avot Tzorech Lezeh His Eiris Lamata. So there's a mitzvah of Parah Aduma, which represents the Midas Hadin because of its redness, because of it being a para. Like the Ramban said, it represents the Midas Hadin, and that gets burned. And we take the ashes from that, and that's somehow an antidote to the Tumas Meis, because it represents the striking down of the Koyach of Ra, of Peronas. Okay. I will V'kimet Shecharev Habayis, V'ein Para. Okay, so that's all good when there was a Parah Aduma. But now there is no Parah Aduma. Back to the Ramban that we started with. The Ramban says that the words Zeis Chukas HaTorah, and again, I said before that these words, you know, this is not a part of the Ramban that we learn, but he says, L'chein Omar HaKosav Zeis Chukas HaTorah, K'loimar HaNechkekes Min HaTorah, V'hi Torah Shebal Peh. So the Torah, the chukas, the Torah chukas is the lashon nechkekes, what's derived from the Torah, what you could dig out from the Torah, and that's Torah shebal peh. The paraduma somehow represents, or the chukas, the Torah represents the Torah shebal peh. So he says, when it's chorev habayis, now I'm back in the Ramchal, the ein para, hutzrucha ha-Torah atzma ba'avayin yitzinu ha-rabim limoser kach l'sreifa ba'avur Yisrael. He says that when there's a need for Parah Aduma, but there is no Parah Aduma, so then it's the Torah Shebal Peh itself. So now, what happened in 1242, when they made a Shelas Chaloyim, and it was told to, right, like, how, they asked the Rosh, what are we supposed to make of this? That the Torah is being burnt. And they were told, Zeis Chukas HaTorah, Dug Zeris Eraisa. What was being again, why it's in Targum, he also referred to that it's in Targum, I don't know, that part's over my head entirely, but what they were being told was that the Sreifas HaTalmud was a Parah Aduma, and just like a Parah Aduma somehow strikes down the most severe part, the Midas Hadin HaChazak, because it's a time that's needed for the world, so right now it's needed for Klal Yisrael that a similar thing should happen, and this is machaper, so to speak. This is in lieu of the Parah Aduma. It's necessary that this should happen, and therefore the Svarim have to get burnt. So that's what happened in 1242. The Svarim were burnt. The Balei HaTosfos were told Dug Zeiris HaRaisa, and the Ramchal explains to us, and the Ramchal means to say they understood this all along. They wrote it over, you know, very, very cryptically, and we didn't understand. I would never have understood if not for the Ramchal, but the Ramchal came and spilled the beans. I mean, really, he didn't. This is a private letter that he wrote to his Rebbe. I don't know how we got it. But he's explaining to us that what was really meant over there was that the Sreifas HaTalmud is in lieu of a Parah Aduma and does the same thing as a Parah Aduma, and he doesn't connect it to the Ramban. I'm connecting it to the Ramban. And the Ramban already really lays the groundwork for that by talking about how the Parah Aduma is the Midas Hadin, because that's why it's a Parah and that's why it's a Duma, and it's the Nechkekes Min HaTorah V'hi Torah Shebal Peh, that all fits very, very beautifully with this Ramchal. I mean, I think clearly the Ramchal was working with that idea of the Ramban. He learned that part of the Ramban, even if I can't. And that's what he's really elaborating on. So that explains one mystery. Right? What was going on in 1242, that piece in the Shmuel Aleket about the dream and the Zeis Chukas HaTorah, and why they made the Tanis on Erev Shabbos, Parshas Parshas Chukas rather than on the date of the month, because it was really, it had to do with the Parshas HaShavua and not with the date of the month. Okay, now what happened in 1731? So then he says, V'hine k'moyishik shekol sopara achas ha'yitzarech lasis acheres. He says, you know, this has to be done periodically, just like in the times of the Parah Aduma, they had to repeat it periodically. When things get very bad, so you need a new tikkun. But he says there is a solution to this. He says the drasha that Chazal make of Zeis HaTeira Adam Kiyamus Ba'ayhel. What does the Gemara say on that? Which is written in the parasha of Parah. We're going to learn that this Shabbos. Zeis HaTeira Adam Kiyamus Ba'ayhel. The Gemara says, "Ein atera nikneis ela b'misha memis atzmei aleha." That in order to acquire tera, one has to really yomus ba'ayel. Ayel meaning the ayel of shel tera. He has to really learn from mesiras nefesh. That's the only way to really be kind of tera. That's written in the parsha Parah Aduma. Zokter Ramchal. So what that tells me is that when there is no Parah Aduma and there needs to be an alternative, so one way could be with the goyim taking the tera and burning it, Rachman al Itzlan. But there's another way. If Yidden take the Torah and are memisim atzma maleha, then that could have the same effect. So he says to his Rebbe, he says, the gezeiras the medina sakoimer, what this Antonio or Giuseppe or whoever he was is holding on to the svarim. He says, don't worry about that at all. He says, I took care of that. You see, he's a little bit further in the letter, where he basically he says, we're running out of time, so we're not going to do the whole thing inside. I'll give you the Maror Malkum. It's in the somebody printed the Igreis HaRamchal, and it's letter 86, Pevav. It's Igreis HaRamchal, if you want to look it up yourself. But he writes over there that because I understood that this is all Parah Aduma business, and that there's an alternative of Adam Kiyamas Ba'ayel, so I created a chabura of people that are learning around the clock, learning Zayar. To him, that was the Iker Limud. You know, now by Yisrael has it's sort of holding in a different place, but at that time, certainly in where he was, that was the Iker Limud. He says that we have a chabura in our Beis Medrash of around the clock shifts. So it should mamish be around the clock whenever a hefsek. Each person has a shift of a few hours, and you know he's sitting in front of his zayir and he's learning. And at the end of his shift, the next person comes and sits down next to him, and he starts, and then the first person goes away. And I don't remember if he says over there how many days this goes on for. And he writes, and don't worry about it. He says he knows he knew how things work in Shemayim, and he knew what just how much was needed to remove this gezeira. He writes this before the gezeira was removed. But he writes to his Rebbe, don't worry about the gezeira, that's farm. I'm taking care of it. And that's what he says in the letter. And now, to conclude, we go back to William Popper. What it was that caused the decision, in spite of this answer to be given in favor of the Jews, is not known. But nearly all the confiscated books were returned to them and the trouble averted. It is known. The Goyim had their cheshbonis. The Ramchal was on the case. He took care of what needed to be taken care of, and the Svarim were returned because they didn't need to be burned anymore. It's not me that made any of this connection between this piece from the book and the letter. I just added the Ramban. But there's a friend of mine whose name is Ellie Markin, who brought to my attention this book by William Popper and this together with this letter from the Ramchal. I think it's an extraordinary discovery and an extraordinary story, and you know, this week is Parshas Parah, so that, for that it's Negeya. Now, is Negeya beyond that? I can't say directly. We're not talking about Gzeiras HaSvarim by any means, but I think that what it tells me about the Koyach of Amelus, but you mamish over here, you mamish see in action the koyach of Amelus Vatera to change things in the Olam HaSol Yonim. In Shemayim, in HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes plans, you know, brings gezeiros onto the world, And Yidden, with their Amelus Patera, this seemingly was a political matter, right? There was a Giuseppe and an Antonio, and they, you know, it was up to them, and there were petitions, and there were deliberations, and you know, there were bureaucrats that were making these decisions, but it all didn't matter. What these current events were really telling on was Amelus Patera. Might that have implications, Bizmanenu Anu? I'm not making any dramatic statements, but certainly it might. I think I find this very very relevant, and I think very I think we should take Hesiris from it, that the koyach of whatever's going on in the world, it really revolves around our Limud HaTorah, and our Limud HaTorah is very potent. And if the world is in an Eis Tzara, then he said at the beginning, you know, even without any of this, our Limud HaTorah is more potent when we, you know, if yeshiva closes down and you have to make time sort of and make space on your own, so there's a Lefum Tzara Agra, that makes our Limud HaTorah more potent. But in light of what we just learned about today, I think all the more so, our Limud HaTorah is far more potent than we imagine to really change the events that are dominating the attention of the world. We definitely can make a contribution. Okay, we will remain in touch. Next year, the only room, right? No classroom. Yeah. What?